member, there is a request that we take out the IHA report, which will be outstanding, because GM is not feeling well and supposed to be part of that people who are supposed to present the progress. So can we release it?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, we, since my late arrival, I observed that he was not at his perfect best. So I would readily agree to release it. We want him when he's at his perfect best. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, thank you. Thank you, honorable members and Deputy Minister in his absence. Thanks for the opportunity. Chair, let me just quickly just introduce ourselves once again. Myself as Acting Chair, Andre Young of NAMC, and we have our CEO, Mr. Ramabulana, next to myself. We will then hand over to our CFO, Sarah Magu-Lawa, to do the budget report, and we also brought some extra ammunition via our specialist agricultural trust senior manager, Zama Talisa. Thanks, Chairperson. If we could move directly to the presentation, we will do it in fourfold, starting with the organizational overview, situation analysis, then going to our program, and finally presenting the budget. Chair, if I could move directly to slide number 6, and also not to belabor the point as presented previously, NAMAC derives the legislative mandate from the Marketing of the Agricultural Products Act and various plans and policies that emanate from government, vis-a-vis the National Development Plan, the Agricultural Policy Action Plan, APAP, the Medium-Term Strategic Financial, MTF, the State of the Nation Address, and mandates received from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries via the Ministry as well. Chairperson, essentially our plan going forward for the financial year will be based on our strategic objectives, our four objectives, and you will find throughout they will speak to the aspect of increasing market access, it will speak to the aspect of promoting efficiency in the marketing of agricultural products, as well as the optimization of export earnings from such agricultural products, and overall the enhancement and viability of the agricultural sector. So NAMC will be creating an enabling environment to achieve those strategic objectives. Chair, that is carried out within five key departments within the NAMC. Our research unit, referred to as MERC, our Market and Economic Research Center, our Agricultural Trust Division, our Agricultural Business Development Division, our Statutory Measures, and then obviously Corporate Services, which supports the rest of the departments. Chairperson, without giving an introduction of the rest of the board, we are currently sitting with a total of 8 board members with a vacancy of 2, which we're hoping will be filled in due course, because a shortage of board members leads to quorum problems when we have one or two apologies to the chairperson. Chair, the last slide before I hand over to CEO, talks about our alignment to the department, which ensures no overlap in terms of functions and services. So essentially, NAMC, if you look at the right-hand column, provides the research on trade, agro-food chains, and smallholder market access, relating to all the functions carried out by the department on the left-hand side. Secondly, the NAMC manages performance of commodity groups in the use of statutory measures for transformation and job creation. We monitor the performance of the agricultural trusts in regards to transformation and job creation, and collaborate with industry to implement programs to link farmers to markets. Chairperson, essentially, the public entity advises, it monitors, it researches, it guides, it collaborates, it publishes, and it promotes. We as council, when our act is eventually introduced for the amendments proposed, that we would have to a certain extent implementation powers as well, where advices, recommendations were approved, the NAMC would also undertake its implementation. So I'd like to hand over to CEO at this stage.
My chairperson then asked us how much time we've got. I will try and skip a few slides so that we save time. A lot of the issues that are highlighted in that part two, which is situational analysis, are very similar to issues that the DG of DAF had raised, as well as Mr. Manya. So I'll skip some of those. Some of those slides. I'll also skip the slide that talks about opportunities and threats, strengths and weaknesses, and go to programs themselves, since I'm sure that's what you're more interested in. My chairperson had indicated that one of the decisions we have within the NNC is what we call statutory measures. As a background, we have about 18 agricultural industries that collect statutory measures. In 2013, the amount collected was just over 450 million. The figure for 2014, which has just been audited, is 480 million rand. There are two additional industries that don't collect levies, however, collect use measures that look into records and returns as well as registration. As an example, there are a number of organizations that are of strategic importance to agriculture that receive support from the funds collected through statutory measures. For example, in research, a lot of the funding goes to the ARC. Some of it goes to organizations such as the Grain Laboratory Services. These are the people who test the quality of wheat before it comes to the country and release for human consumption. Organizations such as JAFADA that looks at transformation. A lot of the money goes to export promotion. So in the wine industry, for argument, for example, wines of South Africa gets funding through statutory measures. In the information space, organizations such as the South African Grain Information Services, as well as SAWIS, get funding through statutory measures as well. We will work to align the transformation activities of industry organizations to government policy. We have previously indicated when we were here that we have developed transformation guidelines that guide industries that collect necessary measures as to how they should spend that money in terms of supporting transformation work. In the previous financial year, just under 84 million was spent to fund projects that support black farmers. Added to that, we publish on an annual basis what we call the Status of Statutory Measures Report, and I believe honorable members received a copy that highlights some of the projects that were supported in the year that we've reviewed. We also, on an annual basis work to update the register of directly affected groups. Anybody who feels that the marketing of agricultural products affects them are in our system in order to ensure that the minister is able to communicate with them on any changes in the marketing environment that he institutes. I will skip the two pages. It gives you an indication of the industries that have special measures, the administrative bodies, and the measures they have in place. The next slide, which is slide 19, gives an indication of the breakdown in terms of the funding that has been collected and where it has been spent. An indication, to give just one indication, it's that we, according to our guidelines, have a rule that says 20% of all the money that gets collected should be spent on transformation, and you will see that in terms of the total that has been spent, we're sitting at 23% in 2013. Specific to this coming financial year, we will work mainly on the statutory measures that looks into agricultural market information. So we'll work to deepen the work that the Food Hub has started in terms of developing a proper information base for the entire food industry. We will work in terms of improving the work of the South African Grain Information Services that looks into the grain complex and ensure that the quality of information that comes out of that is improved. Continue to work in terms of making sure that the Crop Estimate Licensing Committee continue to function and is efficient. We started work in terms of the Supply and Demand Licensing Committee that looks into the grain balance sheet. And that piece of work is important because when you have information that SAGIS have on production and what is in the silo, you need to understand what comes into the country and what leaves the country and what has been consumed in order to get a much complete picture. So the supply and demand lies in, the supply and demand work that we look at gives us a complete picture so that you can have at any given point in time know how much maize or how much wheat is in available for consumption in the country. We will do work to try and address one of the biggest problems that we have in the wheat industry, which is the transport differential on wheat, more especially for wheat that is delivered in the Western Cape. As you know, farmers in the Western Cape, when you look at the Western Cape, there's an overproduction of wheat, whereas Gauteng imports a lot of wheat. And having these two different markets and trying to figure out what the best price is, the price of transport has a very important role in that. And there's always this conflict in terms of why is the transport differential set at the level where it's set. So trying to address that in order to encourage production of wheat in the Western Cape. And you will remember that the DG spoke a lot about APEC focusing on increasing wheat production in the Western Cape. If you don't address the transport differential issues, you are not going to have that production of wheat in the Western Cape. I will move quickly into through this slide, but what we wanted to indicate was funding that is available through statutory measures that looks into market development, and you'll see that the industries that were targeted and that we're working through are industries that are within the APEC document. The view being that you need to be able to increase local demand as well as exports, because if you do that, you'll be able to drive production. There's a certain amount of money that is being earmarked in order to support market development in specific areas that have been targeted. The second division that we have looks into market research, market and economic research. There are three focus areas that we have: agro-food chains, the DG one is where she spoke, indicated about the work that has been done in the poultry industry, but as well as in the other value chains that have been identified through APEC. So the some of the value chains that we assist the department to do are done through this division and under the agro-food chains work. We have a trade focus area as well as the smallholder market access us earlier. I've also given you an indication of the products that I release are produced through that division. There are two other strategic projects that we manage on behalf of DAF within that division. One is the strategic integrated projects, what we call CIP 11. We made a presentation to honorable members in the previous year about the business plan on CIP 11 and some of the work that has been done through CIP 11. So I'm not going to talk to that. The second piece of work that we do is what we call the cultural market, a cultural information management system that we were rolling out on behalf of the department, and we have spoken about this before, and the idea being that for the department to be able to manage agriculture much better as a lead department, they need to have information in their fingertips in terms of the potential, what is currently being produced, and based on the resources that they have, what potential is there to increase production in order to create the required jobs. So AIMS project aims to provide that information in their fingertips in order to be able to take those decisions. The third division we have is what we call the cultural development division. We have three key programs in the division. The development schemes, I'll talk to that just now, what we call business linkages, capacity building, and information and market information. Briefly, in terms of our cultural development schemes, we have a number of schemes that we roll out in partnership with industry as well as the department. When the DG was speaking, she clearly indicated that if you look at the budget that the department has, it's not enough to can do all the things that they wanted to do. And therefore, the partnership with industry becomes very important. So one of the strategies we have developed is to implement what we call development schemes, because it allows for some of the money within the trust and some of the money that is collected through levies, but as well as funding coming from private companies to be spent in programs that support increased production from black farmers, but at the same time grow specific value chains. So for example, we have the vineyard development scheme that we do with WineTech, which is one of the entities within the wine industry, as well as the Northern Cape Aquaculture. Distell is a major buyer in this project and a major fund on some of the investments that we make. We have over 500 hectares planted with vine grapes as well as dried and as well as grapes that will go to for drying. For me it's an interesting story, because you have over 500 hectares of grapes that are owned by black farmers in one area. There are very few places where you'll be able to show over 500 hectares owned by white commercial farmers in one area. It's an interesting story. The grain development scheme that we have, the dairy development scheme that we started with surplus funding that the industry had, and the minister clearly agreed that we should use that money to support black farmers, and we insisted that we should go to a specific area and also to support those black farmers in order to ensure that they are commercially viable. And the stories that are coming out, and when you look at the work that has been done in terms of getting those farmers back into production and supplying some of the big markets that we have in the country is quite encouraging. The Lucerne Development Scheme, the Mohe Development Scheme, we spoke when we were here 2 weeks ago, that we have agreed and developed a strategy in terms of ensuring that black farmers in specific area get over 1,000 goats each in order to ensure that they don't remain small but continue grow. Well, the Sunflower Development Scheme, the Red Meat Development Scheme, as we speak at any given point in time, we're in a position to market 3,000 cattle from smallholder black farmers per cycle. Added to that, there are two schemes that I didn't mention, the Potato Development Scheme that we do in Potato South Africa, as well as the Bean Development Scheme that I've mentioned earlier that we do with Tiger Brands. So the second focus area within this division is training. We will continue continue to implement our management and marketing training courses for smallholder farmers as well and agribusinesses as well as one designed specifically for women for women farmers. We have just completed a review where we went back to each and every one of the farmers who participated in the program since it started to look at where they were and where they are now and tracking their progress. Granted, there are a number of farmers who participated who are no longer farming, but the majority of the farmers who participate in the program and who have continued to be assisted by DAF are actually doing quite well, and we'll be happy to share that report with honourable members to see that and if honourable members are travelling to contact those farmers and go visit them and see, look at their progress, we'll be quite happy to do that. The last division the fourth division that we have looks at what we call agricultural trusts. We spoke about this division when we were here the last time, and I'm not going to really talk to that since the information I'm sure is fairly new. But to say that we have 11 agricultural trusts, we have 25 ministerial trustees, and those 25 exclude trustees that are in the wine industry. The total asset there is just over 2 billion. We have given you an indication of some of the projects that get funded through the different trusts. We indicated the last meeting that there are a number of challenges that we face in the trust, and some of the challenges that we face have to do with legislation, and the committee had indicated that they will call trusts to engage with, but there are a number of challenges that we face. However, one of the things that we do is try to improve communication between the minister and the trust and assist the minister in appointing trustees that are in a position to articulate and argue for the position that the government of the day has articulated. We then also release a report that monitor transformation projects within each and every one of those trusts. I've then also given you an indication of who those trusts are, when they were established, the assets that they inherited, and the value of those assets as we speak. The next few slides gives you an indication of ministerial trustees as well as those trustees who have been newly appointed. So we then have an administration division, and it has three sub-programs, Office of CEO, Finance and Admin, and as well as Human Resources. I'm not going to talk to some of the targets because they are there in the business plan, but I'll allow the CFO to handle issues relating to budgets.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, for allowing me to present the budget of NNC. I'll be short and straight to the point. In terms of the NNC budget allocation for the MTF period, we have been allocated a total allocation of 111,557,000. In terms of an annual allocation in 2015-16, we have been allocated an amount of 34,635,000 for 2015-16, and 2016-17. It's 35 million, and 2017-18 is 41,917,000. There has been a decrease in our budget allocation. Our budget for 2015-16, when we received the budget allocation, it was cut by 3.2 million, and in 2016-17, it was cut by 4.9 million. Which resulted in those percentage decreases that I've indicated there. The move from 2014-15 to 2015-16, there's been a 4% decrease in our budget, and there's been a slight increase in our budget in 2016-17, and a huge increase in 2017-18. But we're not sure whether this one will remain as it is. We'll wait until we receive the allocation for this financial year. In terms of expenditure category, we have divided our expenditure in terms of personnel, which we have allocated an amount of 23,343,000, which represents 67% of our total budget allocation for 2015-16. Then there is administration, wherein we have allocated an amount of 8,178,000, which represents 24% of our total budget allocation, which covers the IT cost, the rental of our offices, and also audit fees, both external and internal audit. Then we have professional services, wherein we allocated an amount of 2,970,000, which represents 9% of our total budget allocation. This is relating to the research project that are conducted by our Market and Economic Research Center, which the CEO has already indicated, and also to fund the agribusiness development division, where the CEO has indicated the schemes that they are conducting, they will be conducting this financial year. Then there's only 144,000 which has been allocated to purchase the computer equipment. I just did a comparison of our budget in terms of the previous allocation for 2015-14-15 and 2015-16. In terms of personnel, there's been an increase of 7%. Administration, there's a decrease of 11%. On professional services, there's a decrease of 36%. And on assets, there's a decrease of 68%. Like I've indicated, this is due to the budget cut by National Treasury. The next slide is just an indication of our budget allocation in a table format. There's not much that I need to explain. I think I'm done, and I thank you.
Presentation from NAMAC. I invite hands to engage with the presentation. Honorable Feltano.
Questions, sir? Okay, sure. And then, I'm sorry about this, sir. And then on to page 23. This is quite commendable, the very first bullet point, assisting project owners. But what did you do you normally find to be lacking in these business plans? You indicate there that you strengthen the project business cases to raise funding. What element do you usually find lacking that you have to spend a little bit of professional time, you know, in picking up those business plans? And then on to page 26. Can you give us just one word, where are these 500 hectares that you spoke of? It's not written here, the Vineyard Development Scheme. I was so impressed. I went to Northern Cape for the first time in my life in December for rural development, and I saw quite a few farms of that. And then page 27. I'm a credit to show those farmers. Oh no, so there's no question there. So this is my page 14, the last one, check. What is the anticipated impact, negative impact? We're talking now about that 36% reduction in your budget.
professional services, which I think is right at the core of your business, are going to suffer a 36% budget cut. What is the anticipated negative impact thereof? And do you think there's anything that can still be done to either through our collaboration or internally within yourselves to try and mitigate that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The first one is 26, page 26. The redevelopment scheme facilitated with Nelson Africa in the Free State. I trust and affirm the clarity of who are the participants in the dairy and who owns the dairy. The other one, it will be, I want to get clarity on the levies collected and professional fees. We're talking two different things. And as I was looking at the levies in the previous pages, the levies, yeah, I see levies sometimes they go far above the budget itself. How is this working? I was looking at the page, I was looking at one of the pages in 2013. There were levies, yeah, under digital measures. It's page 16. Financial year, 450 million collected. And it was under 18 industries. Industries collecting digital levels. If I can get the clarity on those.
If the cut of budgets of staff does have an impact on your budget and work. To we know some of work done by the department and maybe let me say by the department may need the services of the consultant, general in government, there is that problem. Are you affected by that as NAMAC? If yes, then how big is chunk of money going to consultants?
Thank you, Honorable Makabon. On the agribusiness development scheme, I can see you one yard, not in case, doing development. Not mention where their development in research and so forth to continue. But there are others that you have not mentioned. Do you have any reason why you didn't mention where they are? Or, but again, my interest is on the red meat here, facilitated by, because it's one of the priorities in the country. And there is a study that was done by President Monitoring and Evaluation, which shows the number of
families that own cattle, and the majority of them are in Eastern Cape. And there is no coordinated effort in Eastern Cape. So, to improve those the animals themselves, even to broaden the market. So I just want, and the study was very clear. It shows that Eastern Cape followed by KZN, followed by Limpopo. So just to understand that, where is this thing going to happen? Is it going to, because I see 300 animals per cycle, what does that mean? If I can get clarity on that, just to say that from where I'm sitting, I expect to see departments zooming in the opportunity that is existing in those three provinces that has been identified, and the community already they've got the animals. We just need to improve their quality, and then massify the red cluster in that area. So that was clarity on that one. The second one is on, I've seen you document, you've developed the norms and standards for small businesses. Just to check whether is it implemented now or is still in a pipeline for implementation. And the last question beyond the pronouncement that made by the president that government should use its 50% to support the small scale business. In this case, our case is with the small scale farmer. So do you see yourself as an advisor of the minister? Can you develop something that will help to coordinate that for farmers, small farmers, and make sure that we get in with this program actually reach our small farmers?
Thank you, Chair. I'll start and my chairperson will finish. I'll start with the red meat question, because I think it paints a certain picture. You're correct that the Eastern Cape has the highest number of livestock, goats, and probably sheep in the country. So when we started this work in terms of the red meat scheme, we started in the Eastern Cape. And the view being that you can, as long as we run agriculture from a production base, you will not empower people. But if you run agriculture from a marketing point of view, you will use markets for production. And the view was, you have a lot of farmers who are small in different provinces, but they are not marketing their livestock and they are not deriving the required value. If we are in a position to use the infrastructure that government has provided to help them sell their livestock, the value of their stock will increase, and they will take the investment that they've made out of the selling of the livestock and hopefully invest some of it into their farms. So, of the 3,000 farmers cattle that we sell every 3 months, the average price is 5,000 rand. A lot of those farmers, when they were not selling their livestock through a system that we have developed, will be selling their livestock to speculators. And we all know, if I speculate, I go to an area and I'm the only buyer, I will buy my livestock for 2,000 for 2,500 rand if I'm kind. by providing a system that allows them to sell and they are not exploited, you are able to double the amount of money they face out of a single livestock. That puts a lot of money into a small farmer who was not able to do that before. So, to answer your question, the Eastern Cape is an area that we started focusing on. We're supporting a facility in the Northern Cape in Kuruman as we speak. We're supporting a facility in KwaZulu-Natal as we speak. And there's a facility that I know the Department of Agriculture and the Northwest is putting together so that we can support. So those three provinces, as we speak, are being supported, and the Northwest province will also be supported. In the previous presentation, I provided an indication of the locations on each and every one of the schemes, of the facilities, but I'm happy to provide that in contact details so that if members want to visit, they can go and visit. I will, Chair, provide you with an indication of the location of each and every one of the schemes. The reason why we didn't provide in terms of other schemes like grain and lucerne is because they covered a number of provinces. And where we're provided provinces because they're specific for a specific area. But we'll be happy to provide an indication of the provinces where the different schemes have been run in terms of the location. The dairy scheme is in an area called Kwakwa. I'll be happy to provide you with the names of farmers who participate in the scheme. There are two issues in that scheme. One is that the infrastructure the farmers all have on their farms, a lot of it was dilapidated, and they couldn't get the money to redo some of the infrastructure. So I'm talking about things like access to electricity, access to storage facilities for the milk. I don't know the technical name for the storage facilities for the milk, and transportation from their farms to a dairy plant that Nestle owns. So I personally still feel that those farmers need to be helped in terms of owning a much bigger chunk of the value chain. They still are in primary production. But what we have done is we have sorted out their infrastructure in terms of their dairies. The second step is how do you make sure that they own a much bigger chunk of the value chain so they can get a much bigger chunk of the money when the final product is sold. But the area is in Kwakwa. There was a question in terms of clarity on the levies. And I think it's an important question because essentially what happens is that the Act allows farmers to collect a certain amount of money off the sale of their product and pull it together and spend it for what we call a public good. And with an understanding that government has a lot of things that it needs to do, and there might not be enough money to fund agriculture-related activities, and it's therefore important that farmers pay for that themselves. So the Act allows for that. So when we say 450 million, it's the money that farmers have collected themselves, and we use that to fund what we call a public good. And so this is not an amount of money that should be coming from National Treasury through to us from National Treasury through DAF. And that, I think it highlights one of the things that the DG and the Deputy Minister were talking about in terms of saying that if you just look at the allocation from National Treasury, there is no way that the department will be able to do everything that it needs to do. So it uses some of this money to augment, to add to what the services it is provided. There was a question in terms of the impact of budget cuts on two things, on our programs, but secondly on the work we do. The bulk of the money that we spend on procurement of services, either in different schemes or in NHC's core budget complies to the BEE conditions that have been provided. So we ensure that people who do work using NAMC's resources or resources that we use through schemes comply to the legislation related to BEE. So and therefore we ensure that those that are mainly black owned are in a position to provide the services. In terms of the research allocation, because that's the biggest spend we have using treasury funding, we took a conscious decision that says that 60% of the work of the research work we'll do internally and 40% of the work we'll outsource. And the reason why we took the decision to outsource 40% was that we needed to create certain centers of excellence. To give you a good example, before we started the research unit, you didn't have what we called BFAP. When the DC was talking about APAP, the indication was that a lot of work that is being done on very change has been done through BFAP. If we had not taken a decision to outsource 40% of the work, you wouldn't have had universities doing work on cultural economics through an organization such as BFAP that continuously gets support from DAF and entities such as ourselves. So that decision in terms of 40% of the work being outsourced to create centers of excellence in the country that are then available to do research for the public good, we thought it's the right strategy to take because it builds capacity. You can't have this, all this capacity within the department. It has to be built throughout, and then that way you are able to do a lot more work much cheaper. There was a question in terms of location reasons why we felt that we needed to beef up CP11 business plan. And the issue is two ways. One, when the DG was here the last time, she indicated that a lot of the SIPs receive funding from National Treasury. The agriculture SIP, it's one of the very few that doesn't receive any money from National Treasury. And the request from National Treasury was that any projects that we do, we need one, leverage money from the department. But secondly, we needed to go raise private sector money. There isn't anyone in the private sector who will give you money if the business plan is not bankable. And therefore, it became important that on the 28 projects that have been selected by both DAF and Rural Development, each and every one of those had to have a bankable business plan where we'll be able to attract private sector investments. And that's the only reason why we did that. The location in terms of the Vanya Development Scheme, a lot of the nearest town to the farms is Uppington. It's an area called Uppington, and that's the nearest town. But I would be happy to provide the contact details of the person who an extension officer who is there if members are traveling, so the members can be able to see all of the facilities. There was a question about norms and standards for farmer support. That work in terms of norms and standards has just been completed, and I know that the DG will look at the report end of this week, and so once DAF has approved that and processed that, hopefully they will then start implementing that. But that work has just been completed now. And the last question was the 30% in terms of SONA. What we did was say that if you look at the levy money, 20% of that will go to transformation. We then encourage trust to also spend some of their money in terms of transformation. We felt that if you look at our own budget, which is the 36 million, we'd rather look at the bigger pot, which is 450 million, and get 20% of that is transformation, rather than 30% of the 20 of the 36 million. Because we think that that's where the impact is much greater.
There was a question. CEO covered the issue of negative impact on reduction on our professional service budget. But there was also a question in terms of how much money was going to is going to consultancy. There is not much that is going to consultancy. We only allocated an amount of 250,000 from the budget that has been allocated to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the CEO has covered all the questions, but just 2 points of relevance. I've also had the question posed where we've had certain members confusing the levies received with the funding received from the department. They're totally separate. What we do is that we rely especially on our ministerial trustees to ensure that the expenditure resulting from the income received from statutory trusts are indeed carried out in terms of our transformation guidelines and empowerment in the sector. Also, Chair, there was a question with regard to budget cuts. Unfortunately, budget cuts do have an impact, whether we like it or not. Our mandate has to be fulfilled as NAMC. However, we look at cuts in unfunded mandates. We look at cutting down in travel, where we're required to attend certain strategic conferences and events and industry-related events. So it does indeed have an impact. Our funding on consultants is considerably low because we use the skills that we've developed internally. But where further cuts need to be taken, we also look at cutting down on the consultancy fee. The aspect of the agricultural trust issue has also been covered by the CEO.
Thank you very much. Members, anything? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Namak, for the presentation. I think we can see the alignment. You know, when we talk alignment, we're talking this. Probably now you are happy. Now you see the alignment. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's again for dinner. Okay. Let's attend. We'll come back at 7 o'clock.